I'm afraid to look, but I wonder if people in Monet's are staring at me. Can they tell, based on my reactions, that it's not music I'm listening to? Or maybe no one's noticed. Why would they? Why should they care what I'm listening to?
Tyler's bedroom light is still off, so either he's having a detailed conversation with his parents or he's still hungry. Fine, have it your way, Tyler. I'll just keep talking about you. Were you hoping I'd invite the guy in, or would that have made you jealous?
I stir my coffee with the wooden stick.
Either way, after I went inside alone, I washed my face and brushed my teeth, and the moment I stepped into my room, click. We all know the sound a camera makes when it snaps a picture. Even some of the digitals do it for nostalgia's sake. And I always keep my window open about an inch or two to let in the fresh air, which is how I knew someone was standing outside. But I denied it. It was way too creepy to admit to myself on the very first night of my parents' vacation. I was only freaking myself out, I said. Just getting used to being alone. Still, I wasn't dumb enough to change in front of the window, so I sat down on my bed. Click.
Such an idiot, Tyler. In middle school, some people thought you were mentally challenged, but you weren't. You were just an idiot.
Or maybe it wasn't a click, I told myself. Maybe it was a creak. My bed has a wooden frame that creaks a little. That was it. It had to be a creak. I pulled the blankets over my body and undressed beneath them. Then I put on my pajamas, doing everything as slowly as possible, afraid whoever was outside might snap another picture. After all, I wasn't totally sure what a peeping Tom got off on. But wait, another picture would prove he was there, right? Then I could call the police and... But the truth is, I didn't know what to hope for. My parents weren't home. I was alone. I figured ignoring him was my best option. And even though he was outside, I was too afraid of what might happen if he saw me reaching for the phone. Stupid? Yes. But did it make sense? Yes, at the time.
You should have called the cops, Hannah. It might have stopped this snowball from picking up speed, the one you keep talking about, the one that ran over all of us.
So why was it so easy for Tyler to see into my room to begin with? Is that what you're asking? Do I always sleep with my shades wide open? Good question, victim blamers. But it wasn't that easy. The window blinds were kept at an angle exactly as I liked them. On clear nights with my head on the pillow, I could fall asleep looking at the stars. And on stormy nights, I could watch lightning light up the clouds.
I've done that, fallen asleep looking outside. But from the second floor, I don't need to worry about people seeing in.
When my dad found out I kept the blinds open, even a crack, he walked out to the sidewalk to make sure no one could see me from the street. And they couldn't. So he walked from the sidewalk straight across the yard up to my window. And what did he find? That unless they were pretty tall and standing right outside my window on their tiptoes, I was invisible. So how long did you stand like that, Tyler? It must have been pretty uncomfortable. And if you were willing to go through all of that trouble just to get a peek at me, I hope you got at least something out of it.
He did, but not what he wanted. Instead, he got this.
Had I known it was Tyler at the time, had I snuck under the blinds and looked up to see his face, I would have run outside and embarrassed the hell out of him. In fact, that brings up the most interesting part of... Wait, here you come. We'll save that story for later.
I pushed my mug of coffee, not even half finished, to the far end of the table.
Let me describe Tyler's window for the rest of you. The shades are all the way down, yet I can see in. They're made of bamboo or fake bamboo, and between each stick are varying amounts of space. If I stand on my tiptoes like Tyler, I can reach a fairly wide open gap and see in. Okay, he's turning on the light and he shuts the door. He's sitting on the bed, he's yanking off his shoes and now his socks.
I groan. Please don't do anything stupid, Tyler. It's your room. You can do what you want, but don't embarrass yourself anymore.
Maybe I should warn him. Give him a chance to hide. To undress underneath the covers. Maybe I should tap on the window or pound or kick on the wall. Maybe I should give him the same paranoia he gave me.
She's getting louder. Does she want to get caught?
After all, that's why I'm here, right? Revenge. No, revenge would have been fun. Revenge, in a twisted way, would have given me some sense of satisfaction. But this, standing outside Tyler's window, satisfies nothing. My mind is made up. So why? Why am I here? Well, what have I said? I just said I'm not here for me. And if you pass the tapes on, no one but those of you on the list will ever hear what I'm saying. So why am I here?
Tell us, please, Hannah, tell me why I'm listening to this. Why me?
I'm not here to watch you, Tyler. Calm down. I don't care what you're doing. In fact, I'm not even watching you right now. My back's against the wall and I'm staring at the street. It's one of those streets with trees on either side, their branches meeting high above like fingertips touching. Sounds poetic, doesn't it? I even wrote a poem once comparing streets like this to my favorite childhood rhyme. Here is the church, here is the steeple, open it up, yada yada yada. One of you even read that poem I wrote. We'll talk about that later.
Again, it's not me. I didn't even know Hannah wrote poetry.
But I'm talking about Tyler now. And I'm still on Tyler's street. His dark and empty street. He just doesn't know I'm here. Yet. So let's wrap this up before he goes to bed. At school the next day, after Tyler's visit to my window, I told a girl who sat in front of me what happened. This girl's known for being a good listener and sympathetic, and I wanted someone to be afraid for me. I wanted someone to validate my fears. Well, she was definitely not the girl for that job. This girl's got a twisted side that very few of you know about. A peeping Tom? She said. You mean a real one? I think so, I told her. I always wondered what that'd be like, she said. Having a peeping Tom is kind of, I don't know, sexy.
Definitely twisted. But who is she? And why do I care?
She smiled and raised an eyebrow. Do you think he'll come back? Honestly, the thought of him coming back never occurred to me. But now it was freaking me out. What if he does? I asked. Then you'll have to tell me about it, she said. And then she turned back around, ending our conversation. Now, this girl and I had never hung out. We took a lot of the same electives. We were nice to each other in class, and sometimes we talked about hanging out, but we never did. Here, I thought, was a golden opportunity. I tapped her on the shoulder and told her that my parents were out of town. How would she like to come over and catch a peeping Tom? After school, I went home with her to grab her stuff. Then she came over to my house. Since it was a weeknight and she was probably going to be out late, she told her parents we were working on a school project.
God, does everyone use that excuse?
We finished our homework at the dining room table, waiting for it to get dark outside. Her car was parked out front as bait. Two girls. Irresistible, right?
I squirm a little, shifting in my seat.
We moved into my bedroom and sat cross-legged on the bed facing each other, talking about everything imaginable. To catch our peeping Tom, we knew we needed to keep the talking quiet. We needed to hear that first click. Her mouth dropped open. Her eyes, I've never seen them that happy. She whispered for me to keep talking. Pretend you didn't hear. Just play along. I nodded. Then she covered her mouth and ad-libbed, Oh my God, you let him touch you where? We gossiped for a couple minutes, trying to hold back any inappropriate laughter, the kind that would have given us away. But the clicking stopped and we were running out of things to gossip about. You know what I could use? She asked. A nice, deep back massage. You're evil. I whispered. She winked at me, then got on her knees and worked her hands forward like a cat stretching until she was all the way down on my bed. Click.
I sincerely hope you burned or erased those pictures, Tyler. Because if they get out, even if it's not your fault, I'd hate to think what might happen to you.
I straddled her back. Click. Pushed aside her hair. Click. And began rubbing her shoulders. Click. Click. She turned away from the window and whispered, "You know what it means if he stops taking pictures, right?" I told her I didn't. "It means he's doing something else." Click. "Oh, well," she said. I kept rubbing her shoulders. In fact, I thought I was doing a pretty good job because she stopped talking and her lips curled into a beautiful smile. But then she whispered a new idea, a way to catch this pervert in the act. I told her no. One of us should just leave the room, say we need to use the bathroom, and call the cops. We could end it right there. But that didn't happen. "No way," she said. "I'm not leaving until I find out if I know him. What if he goes to our school?" "What if he does?" I asked. She told me to follow her lead, and then she rolled out from under my legs. According to her plan, when she said three, I was to charge the window. But I thought the peeping Tom might have left, might have gotten scared, because there hadn't been a click since I climbed off of her. "It's time for some body lotion," she said. Click. That sound sent my anger through the roof. Okay, I can play this game, I thought. "Look in my top drawer." She pointed to the drawer nearest the window, and I nodded.
Beneath my arms, my shirt is slightly damp. I shift uncomfortably in my seat again. But God, I can't stop listening.
She pulled open the drawer, looked inside, and covered her mouth. What? There was nothing in my drawer worthy of a reaction like that. There was nothing in my whole room worthy of that. "I didn't know you were into this," she said nice and loud. "We should use it together." Okay, I said. She reached into the drawer, pushed some things around, then covered her mouth again. "Hannah," she said, "how many of these do you have? You are definitely a naughty girl." Click, click. Very clever, I thought. "Why don't you count them?" So she did. "Let's see now. Here's one and two." I slid one foot off the bed. "Three!" I jumped at the window and yanked the cord. The blinds flew up. I looked for your face, but you were moving so fast. The other girl, she wasn't looking at your face, Tyler. "Oh my God," she screamed. "He's cramming his dick in his pants."
"Tyler, wherever you are, I am so sorry. You deserve this, but I'm sorry."
"So, who were you? I saw your height and your hair, but I couldn't see your face clearly enough. Still, you gave yourself up, Tyler." The next day at school, I asked so many people the exact same question. "Where were you last night?" Some said they were at home or at a friend's house or at the movies, none of your business. But you, Tyler, you had the most defensive and interesting response of all. "What, me? Nowhere." And for some reason, telling me you were nowhere made your eyes twitch and your forehead break into a sweat.
"You are such an idiot, Tyler."
"Hey, at least you're original. And at least you stopped coming around my house. But your presence, Tyler, that never left. After your visits, I twisted my blind shut every night. I locked out the stars and I never saw lightning again. Each night, I simply turned out the lights and went to bed. Why didn't you leave me alone, Tyler? My house, my bedroom. They were supposed to be safe for me, safe from everything outside. But you were the one who took that away. Well, not all of it."
Her voice trembles.
"But you took away what was left."
She pauses, and within that silence, I realize how intensely I've been staring at nothing, staring in the direction of my mug on the far end of the table, but not at it. I want to, but I'm too intimidated to look at the people around me, They have to be watching me now, trying to understand the pained look on my face, trying to figure out who this poor kid is listening to outdated audio tapes.
So how important is your security, Tyler? What about your privacy? Maybe it's not as important to you as it was for me, but that's not for you to decide.
I look through the window, past my reflection to the barely lit patio garden. I can't tell if anyone's still there, beyond the brick and ivy column sitting at her table. A table that at one time was Hannah's other safe place.
So who was this mystery girl featured in your story, Tyler? Who smiled so beautifully when I rubbed her back? Who helped me expose you? Should I tell? That depends. What did she ever do to me? For the answer, insert tape 3.
But I'm ready for it to be me, Hannah. I'm ready to get this over with.
Oh, and Tyler, I'm standing outside your window again. I walked away to finish your story, but your bedroom light has been out for some time. So I'm back now.
There's a long pause, a rustling of leaves.
Knock, knock, Tyler.
I hear it. She taps on the window twice.
Don't worry. You'll find out soon enough.
I press stop. I slip off the headphones, wrap the yellow cord tightly around the Walkman, and tuck it into my jacket pocket. Across the room, Monet's bookshelf is loaded with old books. Discards mostly. Paperback, westerns, new age, sci-fi. Carefully weaving through the crowded tables, I walk over to it. A massive thesaurus sits beside a dictionary that's missing its hardcover spine. Down the exposed paper spine, someone wrote, "Dictionary" in heavy black ink. Stacked on the same shelf, each in a different color, are 5 books. They're approximately the same size as your books, but purchased for their blank pages. Scribble books, they call them. Each year, a new one is added, and people scrawl whatever they want inside. They mark special occasions, write horrible poetry, sketch things that are beautiful or grotesque, or just rant. Each book has a scrap of duct tape on the spine with a year written on it. I pull out the one from our freshman year. With all the time Hannah spent at Monet's, maybe she wrote something in here, like a poem. Or maybe she had other talents I didn't know about. Maybe she knew how to draw. I'm just looking for something apart from the ugliness of these tapes. I need that right now. I need to see her in a different way. Since most people date their entries, I flip toward the back, to September. And there it is. To keep the page, I shut the book on my index finger and take it back to my table. I take a slow sip of lukewarm coffee, reopen the book, and read the words scribbled in red ink near the top. Everyone needs an Ollie Ollie Oxen Free. It's signed with 3 sets of initials. J.D., A.S., H.B. Jessica Davis, Alex Standall, Hannah Baker. Below the initials, pressed into the crease between the pages, someone stuck an upside-down photograph. I pull it out, flip it over, then spin it right side up. It's Hannah. God, I love her smile. And her hair, it's still long. One of her arms is wrapped around the waist of another student, Courtney Crimson. And behind them is a crowd of students. Everyone's either holding a bottle, a can, or a red plastic cup. It's dark at the party and Courtney doesn't look happy. But she doesn't look mad either. She looks nervous, I think. Why? Cassette 3, side A. I press play.
Courtney Crimson. What a pretty name. And yes, a very pretty girl as well. Pretty hair, pretty smile, perfect skin. And you're also very nice. Everyone says so.
I stare at the picture in the scribble book. Hannah's arm around Courtney's waist at some random party. Hannah is happy. Courtney is nervous, but I have no idea why.
Yes, Courtney. You're sweet to everyone you meet in the halls. You're sweet to everyone as they walk with you to your car after school.
I sip my coffee, which is getting cold.
You're definitely one of the most popular girls in school. And you are just so sweet, right? Wrong.
I pound back the coffee to empty the mug.
Yes, my dear listeners, Courtney is nice to whomever she comes in contact with. or whomever she's talking to. And yet, ask yourselves, is it all a show?
I carry my mug to the Pour It Yourself bar for a refill.
I think it is. Now let me tell you why. First off, to everyone listening, I doubt Tyler will let you see the pictures he took of me giving Courtney a back rub.
The container of half and half slips from my grip and clatters to the counter. I catch it before it falls to the floor, then look over my shoulder. The girl behind the register tips her head back and laughs. Courtney's the one from Hannah's room? Hannah takes an extra long pause. She knows that the info needs to sink in.
If you have seen those pictures, lucky you. I'm sure they're very sexy. But as you know, they're also very posed. Posed. What an interesting word to sum up Courtney's tale. Because when you're posed, you know someone's watching. You put on your very best smile. You let your sweetest personality shine.
Unlike Courtney's photo in the scribble book.
And in high school, people are always watching, so there's always a reason to pose.
I press the top of the urn, and a stream of dark coffee spills into the mug.
I don't think you do this intentionally, Courtney. And that's why I put you on these tapes. To let you know that what you do affects others. More specifically, it affected me.
Courtney does come off as genuinely sweet. Hearing her story here, on these tapes, must have killed her. A shiver crawls up my back. Killed her. A phrase I will now drop from my vocabulary.
Courtney Crimson. The name sounds almost too perfect. And as I said, you look perfect too. The only thing left is to be perfect.
With my coffee, cream, and sugar cubes mixed, I return to my table.
So that's where I give you credit. You could have taken the bitch route and still had all the friends and boyfriends you could handle. But instead, you took the sweet route, so everyone would like you and not a soul would hate you. Let me be very clear. I do not hate you, Courtney. In fact, I don't even dislike you. But for a time, I thought you and I were becoming friends.
I don't remember that. I don't think I ever saw them hanging out.
It turns out you were just grooming me to be another tally mark under people who think Courtney Crimson is a really neat girl, another guaranteed vote for most liked in the senior yearbook. And once you did it to me, and I realized it, I watched you do it to others. Here, Courtney, is your contribution to the anthology of my life. Did you like that? The anthology of my life. I just made it up.
I pull my backpack onto my lap and unzip the largest pocket.
The day after Tyler took the candid shots of our student bodies began like any other. The bell to first period rang and Courtney, as usual, ran in a couple seconds late. Not that it mattered because Mrs. Dillard wasn't there yet either. Also, not unusual.
I remove Hannah's map and unfold it on the small table.
When you were done chatting to the person in front of you, Courtney, I tapped you on the shoulder. The moment you looked into my eyes, we both began laughing. We spoke a bunch of two or three word sentences, but I don't remember who said what, because whatever you said were my thoughts as well.
So weird.
I know. What the hell? Can you imagine? So funny. Then, when Mrs. Dillard finally came in, you turned around to face the front of the room, and when class was over, you left.
I searched the map for the red star at Tyler's house. Part of me feels strange about keeping such a close track of Hannah's story. Like I'm obsessed, too obsessed, while another part of me wants to deny the obsession.
It wasn't until I stepped into the hall on my way to second period that I thought, wait a sec, she didn't say goodbye.
I'm just doing what she asked. That's not obsession. It's respect. I'm living out her last requests.
Did you say goodbye on any other day? No, not often. But after the previous night, this time it felt intentional. I guess I thought that after what we'd experienced less than 24 hours before, we would now be more than just casual acquaintances.
A4, a red star on Tyler's house.
But that evidently is what we'd become once again. We said hello in the halls, and sometimes you said goodbye to me after class. But never more than you said it to anyone else.
Until the night of the party. Until the night you needed me again.
I press pause. I need a moment to catch up. I can't listen anymore till I do that. I slip off the headphones and hang them around my neck. The girl I took woodshop with walks around with a plastic tub, gathering mugs and plates from empty tables. I look away toward the dark window when she clears the place next to me. Her reflection glances my way several times, but I don't turn around. When she leaves, I sip my coffee and try my hardest not to think. I just wait. 15 minutes later, a bus drives by the front door of Monet's and the waiting is over. I grab the map, toss my backpack over my shoulder, and run out the door. The bus is stopped at the far corner. I race down the sidewalk, up the bus steps, and find an empty seat near the middle. The driver looks at me in the rearview mirror.
"I'm ahead of schedule," he says. "We'll be sitting here a couple minutes."
I nod, press the headphones into my ears, and look out the window. I press play.
Let me tell you that there is a much bigger, more important party later in the tapes.
Is that it? Is that where I come in?
But this is the party that brings Courtney into the mix. I was at school, backpack on my shoulder, heading out of first period when you grabbed my hand. "Hannah, wait up," you said. "How are you?" Your smile, your teeth, flawless. I probably said, "Fine," or "Good, how are you?" But truthfully, I didn't care, Courtney. Every time our eyes caught each other in a crowded hall and I watched your gaze jump to someone else, I lost a little more respect for you. And sometimes I wondered how many people in that one hallway felt the same. You went on to ask if I'd heard about the party later that night. I said that I had, but that I didn't feel like going and wandering around looking for someone to talk to. Or I didn't feel like wandering around looking for someone to save me from talking to someone else. "We should go together," you said. And you tilted your head to the side, flashed your smile, and though I'm probably imagining this, I think I even saw you bat your eyes.
Yeah, that's Courtney. No one can resist her, and she flirts with everyone.
"Why?" I asked. "Why should we go to a party together?" That obviously took you by surprise. I mean, you are who you are, and everyone wants to go to a party with you. To at least be seen entering a party with you. Everyone, boys, girls, it doesn't matter. That's the kind of admiration people have for you.
Have or had? Because I have a feeling that's about to change.
Most of them, unfortunately, don't realize how carefully you plan that image. You repeated my question. "Why should we go to a party together?" "Hannah, so we can hang out." I asked why you wanted to hang out after ignoring me for so long. But of course, you denied ignoring me at all. You said I must have misread things. And the party would be a good chance to get to know each other better. And although I was still suspicious, you are who you are, and everyone wants to go to a party with you.
But you knew, Hannah. You knew, but you still went. Why?
"Great," you said. "Can you drive?" And my heart tumbled a bit. But I pulled it back up and ignored my suspicions once again. "Sure, Courtney," I said. "What time?" You flipped open your notebook and ripped out a piece of paper. In tiny blue letters, you wrote your address, the time, and your initials, CC. You handed me the paper, said, "This is going to be great," then gathered up your stuff and left.
The bus door slides shut, and we pull away from the curb.
Guess what, Courtney? On your way out the door, you forgot to say goodbye. So here's my theory as to why you wanted to go to a party with me. You knew I was pissed at being ignored by you. At the very least, you knew I was hurt, and that was not good for your flawless reputation. That had to be fixed. D4 on your map, everybody. Courtney's house.
I reopen the map.
When I pulled up to the curb, your front door flew open. Out you came, bounding off the porch and down the walkway. Your mom, before shutting the front door, bent down to get a good look inside my car. "Don't worry, Mrs. Crimson," I thought. "No boys in here, no alcohol, no drugs, no fun."
Why do I feel so compelled to follow her map? I don't need to. I'm listening to the tapes, every single one, front and back, and that should be enough. But it's not.
You opened the passenger door, sat down, and buckled up. Thanks for the lift, you said.
I'm not following the map because she wants me to. I'm following it because I need to understand. Whatever it takes, I need to truly understand what happened to her.
A lift? Already having doubts about why you invited me, that was not the hello I wanted to hear.
D4. It's only a handful of blocks from Tyler's house.
I wanted to be wrong about you, Courtney. I did. I wanted you to see it as me picking you up so we could go to a party together. And that is very different from me giving you a lift. At that moment, I knew how the party would play out for us. But how it ended? Well, that was a surprise. That was weird.
Bolted to the back of each seat, behind a square sheet of plexiglass, is a map of all the city's bus routes. From where I caught this one, the bus will drive by Courtney's house, turn left a block before Tyler's, then stop.
We parked 2.5 blocks away, which was actually the closest spot we could get. I have one of those car stereos that continues playing even after I shut off the engine. It won't stop until someone opens a door. But that night, when I opened the door, the music didn't stop. It just sounded distant. Oh my God, you said. I think that music's coming from the party. Did I mention we were 2.5 blocks away? That's how loud it was. That party was absolutely begging for a police visit.
Which is why I don't go to many parties. I'm so close to being valedictorian. One mistake could mess it all up for me.
We took our place in the stream of students heading to the party, like joining a bunch of salmon heading upstream to mate. When we got there, two football players, never to be seen at a party without their jerseys, stood on opposite sides of the gate collecting beer money. So I reached into my pocket for some cash. Over the loud music, you shouted to me, "Don't worry about it!" We got to the gate, and one of the guys said, $2 a cup. Then he realized who he was talking to. "Oh, hey, Courtney, here you go." And he handed you a red plastic cup.
$2? That's it? They must charge girls differently.
You nodded your head in my direction. The guy smiled and handed me a cup. But when I grabbed for it, he didn't let go. He told me his replacement was coming any minute and that we should hang out. I smiled at him, but you grabbed me by the arm and pulled me through the gate. "Don't," you said. "Trust me." I asked why, but you were scanning the crowd and didn't hear me.
I don't remember any stories of Courtney and any football players. Basketball players, yes, many of them. But football? None.
Then you said we should split up. And do you want to know my first thought when you said that, Courtney? Gee, that sure didn't take long. You said there were a few people you needed to see and that we should meet up later. I lied and said there were some people I needed to see, too. Then you told me not to leave without you. You're my ride, remember? How could I forget, Courtney?
The bus turns onto Courtney Street, with for sale signs posted in about a third of the yards. When we pass Courtney's house, I half expect to see a red star spray-painted on the front door. But the porch is buried in darkness. No porch light, no lights in any window at all.
But you smiled at me, and finally you said the magic word, goodbye. And goodbye was exactly what you meant.
Miss your stop, Clay? An icy chill shoots up my spine. A voice, a girl's voice, but not from the headphones. I press pause. Someone called my name, but from where? Across the aisle, the dark belt of windows acts like a mirror. I see the reflection of a girl sitting behind me. Maybe my age, but do I know her? I turn my body around and look over the backrest. Sky Miller, my 8th grade crush. She smiles, or maybe it's more of a smirk, because she knows she startled the hell out of me. Sky's always been pretty, but she acts like the thoughts never crossed her mind, especially the past couple of years. She dresses in dull, loose clothing every day, almost burying herself within them. Tonight, it's a bulky gray sweatshirt and matching pants. I pull the headphones from my ears. Hey, Sky. Miss your house? She asks. More words than she's spoken to me in a long time. more words than I've heard her speak to anyone in a long time. He'll stop if you ask him to. I shake my head. No, not my house. The bus takes a left at the next intersection and pulls up to the curb. The door slides open, and the driver yells back,
"Anyone?"
I look to the front of the bus, into the rearview mirror, and catch the driver's eye. Then I turn back to Skye. "Where are you going?" I ask. The smirk returns. Her eyes stay focused on mine. She's trying so hard to make me feel uncomfortable. And it's working. "I'm not going anywhere," she finally says. Why does she do this? What happened between eighth grade and now? Why does she insist on being an outcast? What changed? No one knows. One day, at least it seemed that fast, she just stopped wanting to be a part of anything. But this is my stop, and I should get off. It's halfway between two of the red stars, Tyler's house and Courtney's. Or instead, I could stay and talk with Skye. To be more exact, I could stay and try to talk with her, an almost guaranteed one-way conversation.
"See you tomorrow,"
she says. And that's it. The conversation's over. Part of me, I admit, is relieved. "See you later," I say. I lift my backpack over my shoulder and walk to the front of the bus. I thank the driver and return to the cold air outside. The door shuts behind me. The bus pulls away. Skye's window passes with her head resting against the glass and her eyes shut. I pull my backpack onto both shoulders and tighten the straps. Alone once again, I start walking to Tyler's house. Okay, but how will I know which one it is? This is the block, I know that, and it's this side of the block. But Hannah gave no address. If his bedroom light's on, maybe I'll see the bamboo shutters. With each house I walk by, trying not to stare too long, I look for those shutters. Maybe I'll get lucky. Maybe there will be a sign posted in his yard. "Peeping Tom, come inside." I can't stifle a laugh at my own lame joke. With Hannah's words ready at the push of a button, it feels wrong to smile like this. But it also feels nice. It feels like the first time I've smiled in months, though it's only been hours. Then, two houses away, I see it. I stop smiling. The bedroom light is on and the bamboo shutters are down. A spiderweb of silver duct tape holds the fractured window together. Was it a rock? Did someone throw a rock at Tyler's window? Was it someone who knew? Someone from the list? As I get closer, I can almost picture her, Hannah, standing beside his window whispering into a recorder. Words too soft for me to hear at this distance. But in the end, the words reach me. A square hedge divides Tyler's front yard from the next. I walk toward it to shield myself from view, because he has to be watching, looking out, waiting for someone to bust his window wide open.
"You want to throw something?"
The icy chill comes slicing back. I spin around, ready to hit someone and run.
"Hold it, it's me."
Marcus Cooley from school. I lean forward, resting my hands on my knees, exhausted. "What are you doing here?" I ask. Marcus holds a fist-sized rock just below my eyes.
"Take it,"
he says. I look up at him. "Why?"
"You'll feel better, Clay. Honest."
I look over at the window, at the duct tape. Then I look down and close my eyes, shaking my head. "Let me guess, Marcus. You're on the tapes." He doesn't answer. He doesn't need to. When I look up, the corners of his eyes struggle to hold back a smile. And in that struggle, I can tell he's not ashamed. I nod to Tyler's window. "Did you do that?" He pushes the rock into my hand. "You'd be the first to say no, Clay." My heart starts racing. Not from Marcus standing here, or Tyler standing somewhere inside, or the heavy rock in my hand, but from what he just told me. "You're the third to come out here," he says, "plus me." I try to picture anyone other than Marcus, someone else on the list, throwing a rock at Tyler's window, but I can't. It doesn't make sense. We're all on the list, all of us. We're all guilty of something. Why is Tyler any different than the rest of us? I stare down at the rock in my hand. "Why are you doing this?" I ask. He nods over his shoulder, down the block. "That's my house down there. With the light on, I've been watching Tyler's house to see who comes around." I can't imagine what Tyler told his parents. Did he plead with them not to replace the window because more might be coming? And what did they say? Did they ask how he knew? Did they ask why? The first was Alex, Marcus says. He doesn't sound the least bit ashamed to be telling me this. We were hanging out at my house when out of nowhere he wanted me to point out Tyler's house. I didn't know why. It's not like they were friends, but he really wanted to know. So what? You just gave him a rock to throw at his window? No, it was his idea. I didn't even know the tapes existed yet. I toss the rock up a few inches, then catch its weight in my other hand. Even before the previous rocks weakened it, the window would stand no chance against this. So why did Marcus choose this rock for me? He's heard the rest of the tapes, but he wants me to be the one to finish off the window. Why? I toss the rock back to my other hand. Beyond his shoulder, I can see the porch light at Marcus's house. I should make him tell me which window is his. I should tell him this rock is going through one of his house's windows, and he might as well tell me which one is his so I don't scare the hell out of his little sister. I grip the rock hard, harder, but there's no way to keep my voice from shaking. You're a dick, Marcus. What? You're on the tapes too, I say, right? So are you, Clay. My voice shakes from both rage and an attempt to hold back tears. What makes us so different from him? He's a peeping Tom, Marcus says. He's a freak. He looked in Hannah's window, so why not break his? And you? I ask. What did you do? For a moment, his eyes stare through me. Then he blinks. Nothing. It's ridiculous, he says. I don't belong on those tapes. Hannah just wanted an excuse to kill herself. I let the rock drop onto the sidewalk. It was either that or smash it in his face right there. Get the hell away from me, I tell him. It's my street, Clay. My fingers close and tighten into a fist. I look down at the rock, aching to pick it back up. But I turn away, fast. I walk the full length of the sidewalk in front of Tyler's house without looking at the window. I can't let myself think. I pull the headphones from my neck and place them back in my ears. I reach into my pocket and hit play.
Was I disappointed when you said goodbye to me, Courtney? Not much. It's hard to be disappointed when what you expected turns out to be true.
Keep walking, Clay.
But did I feel used? Absolutely. And yet the whole time Courtney was using me, she probably thought she was polishing up her image in my eyes. Can you say backfire? That party turned into a night of firsts for me. I saw my very first fistfight, which was horrible. I have no idea what it was about, but it started right behind me. Two guys were shouting, and when I turned around, their chests were about an inch apart. A crowd began to form, egging them on. The mob became a thick wall, not about to let the situation die down. All they needed was for one chest to close the gap, even accidentally, and it was on. And that's what happened. The bump of a chest turned into a shove, which right away became a fist pounding a jaw. After two more punches, I turned away and pushed through the wall of people, which by that time was four bodies deep. Some in the back were standing on tiptoes for a better view. Disgusting. I ran inside, searching for a bathroom to hide in. I didn't feel physically sick, but mentally, my mind was twisting in so many ways. The only thing I could think of was that I needed to vomit.
I pull out my map and look for the nearest star that isn't Courtney's. I'm not going there. I'm not listening to Hannah talk about her while I stare at her dark, empty house. I'm on to the next thing.
In Health, we once saw a documentary on migraines. One of the men interviewed used to fall on his knees and bang his head against the floor over and over during attacks. This diverted the pain from deep inside his brain where he couldn't reach it to a pain outside that he had control over. And in a way, by vomiting, that's what I hope to do.
The exact locations of the red stars are hard to see if I don't stop walking, if I don't stand still beneath a street lamp. But I can't stop walking. Not even for a moment.
Watching those guys pummel each other so no one would suspect them of being weak was too much for me. Their reputations were more important than their faces, and Courtney's reputation was more important than my reputation. Did anyone at that party actually believe she brought me there as a friend? Or did they simply think I was her latest charity case? I guess I'll never know.
I refold the map and tuck it under my arm.
Unfortunately, the only bathroom I found was occupied, so I went back outside. The fistfight was over, everything had returned to normal, and I needed to leave.
The temperature continues to fall, and I tighten my arms around my chest as I walk.
When I approached the gate, the same gate where I'd entered the party, guess who was standing there all by himself? Tyler Down, fully equipped with his camera.
It's time to leave Tyler alone, Hannah.
When he saw me, the look on his face was priceless and pitiful. He crossed his arms trying to shield the camera from my view. But why would he do that? Everyone knows he's on the yearbook staff. But I asked anyway. What's that for, Tyler?
What? Oh, this, yearbook.
And then from behind me, someone called my name. I'm not going to tell you who it was because it doesn't matter. Like the person who grabbed my ass at Blue Spot Liquor. What he was about to say was just an after effect of someone else's actions. Someone else's callousness.
Courtney said I should talk to you,
he said.
I exhale quickly. After this, your reputation is ruined, Courtney.
I looked behind him. At the far end of the yard, three silver kegs sat in the middle of an inflatable pool full of ice. Beside the pool, Courtney was talking to three boys from another school. The boy standing in front of me took a slow sip from his beer.
She says you're fun to hang out with.
And I started to soften. I started letting my guard down. Sure, maybe I was right and Courtney was only concerned with saving her image. Maybe she thought by sending a cute boy over to talk to me that I'd forget all about her ignoring me at the party. Yes, he was kind of cute. And okay, maybe I was willing to have a little selective amnesia.
But something happened, Hannah. What?
After we spoke for a while, this guy said he had a confession to make. Courtney didn't actually send him over to talk to me. But he did overhear her talking about me, and that's why he came and found me. I asked him what Courtney said, and he just smiled and looked down at the grass. I was through with these games. I demanded to know what she said about me.
That you're fun to hang out with,
he repeated. I started rebuilding my guard brick by brick. Fun? How? He shrugged. How? Ready for this, everyone? Our sweet little Miss Crimson told this guy and whoever else was standing within earshot that I've got a few surprises buried in my dresser drawers.
My breath stops like I've been sucker punched in the stomach. She made that up. Courtney completely made that up.
And out of the corner of my eye, I watched Tyler Down start walking away. By now, the tears were welling up. Did she say what was in there? I asked. Again, he smiled. My face felt so hot. My hands started shaking, and I asked him why he believed her. Do you believe everything people say about me? He told me to calm down, that it didn't matter. Yes, I told him. It does matter. I left him to have a little conversation over by the keg pool. But on my way there, I had a better idea. I ran up to Tyler and stood in front of him. You want a picture? I said. Follow me. Then I grabbed his arm and led him across the yard.
The picture. The one from the scribble book.
Tyler protested the whole way, thinking I wanted him to take a picture of the keg pool.
They'll never print it, he said. You know, underage drinking?
Right. Why would they want a yearbook that showed actual student life? Not that, I said. I want you to take a picture of me. Me and Courtney. I swear, at that moment his forehead was glistening. Me and the back rub girl together again. I asked if he was all right.
Yeah, no, sure, fine.
And that's an exact quote.
In the picture, Hannah's arm is wrapped around Courtney's waist. Hannah's laughing, but Courtney isn't. She's nervous. And now I know why.
Courtney was in the middle of having her cup filled, and I told Tyler to wait right there. When Courtney saw me, she asked if I was having fun. Someone wants to take your picture, I said. Then I grabbed her by the arm and pulled her over to Tyler. I told her to put down her cup, or the yearbook wouldn't be able to use it.
Tyler put it in the scribblebook at Monet's. He wanted us to see it.
This was not part of her plan. She only invited me to the party to clear her beautiful name after ignoring me for so long. A permanent photograph linking us to one another was not supposed to happen. Courtney tried to pull out of my grip.
I don't want to, she said.
I whirled around to face her. Why not, Courtney? Why did you invite me here? Please don't tell me I was just a chauffeur. I mean, I thought we were becoming friends.
He must have put it in the scribble book because he knew we would never find it in the yearbook. He would never turn it in. Not after learning what the photograph really meant.
We are friends, she said. Then put down your drink, I said. It's time for a picture. Tyler aimed the camera and focused his lens, waiting for our beautiful natural smiles. Courtney lowered the drink to her side. I put my arm around her waist and told her, if you ever want to borrow anything from my dresser, Courtney, all you need to do is ask.
Ready?
Tyler said. I leaned forward, pretending someone had just told me the funniest joke in the world. Click. Then I told them I was leaving because the party sucked. Courtney begged me to stay. She told me to be reasonable. And maybe I was being a little insensitive. I mean, she wasn't ready to leave. How would she get home if her chauffeur didn't wait around for her? Find another ride, I said, and I left. Part of me wanted to cry for being so right about her invitation. Instead, on the long walk back to my car, I started laughing. And I shouted into the trees, what is going on? And then someone called my name. What do you want, Tyler? He told me I was right about the party.
The party does suck.
No, Tyler, it doesn't, I said. Then I asked why he was following me. His eyes dropped to his camera and he fiddled with the lens. He needed a ride home, he said. At that, I really started laughing. Not specifically at what he said, but at the absurdity of the whole night. Did he really have no clue that I knew about his night prowling, about his nocturnal missions? Or did he sincerely hope I didn't know? Because as long as I didn't know, we could be friends, right? Fine, I said, but we're not stopping anywhere. A few times on the ride home, he tried talking to me, but each time I cut him off. I did not want to act like everything was okay, because it wasn't. And after I dropped him off, I took the longest possible route home.
I have a feeling I'll be doing the same.
I explored alleys and hidden roads I never knew existed. I discovered neighborhoods entirely new to me. And finally, I discovered I was sick of this town and everything in it.
I'm starting to get there too, Hannah.
Next side.
I pressed stop.